We're talking with Barbara Ehrenreich, whose most recent book, and she's written so many, is called Brightsided: How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. So, Barb, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. Good to be back with you, Joe.
I should, in interest of disclosure, point out that I've known you for a gazillion years, from Reed College and way back then.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
God, what was that, 30, 40 years ago?
Best not to go there. Anyway, I want to start out by asking you, what exactly is it about your negative personality that gave you cancer?
Oh, thank you, Joe. Well, you know, actually, we're past that point of saying that your personality caused your cancer. That was big in the 70s and a little bit into the 80s. In fact, I think Susan Sontag's book, Illness as a Metaphor, took that on in part, the idea that there were particular cancer personalities.
Right.
But then by the time I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2001, it was a new line. It wasn't that your personality had caused it, but that if you had a negative personality, you wouldn't get better. That you would only get better if you were very, very positive and upbeat and cheerful, and even to the point of thinking of the cancer as a gift.
Oh, wait a minute. Cancer as a gift?
Yeah. You have done your Christmas list yet?
I'm not putting cancer on my Christmas list. I have to say I have almost a morbid fear of cancer myself.
Well, no, you see, that's all wrong. I mean, it's not only breast cancer patients, we're told this, but prostate cancer patients, that they are going to come out of the experience more evolved and more spiritual and more sensitive, and so that's why it's really a gift.
I see. This is, to me, ridiculous.
Really?
Well, yeah, you know, I think disease is a drag. It's a fact of life. I suspect, personally, that the plague of cancer that we're now encountering in the first world has something to do with the environmental pollution that goes on, and I think that the research is ill-focused, and, you know, I could go on and on with that, but I certainly don't see any kind of reason to believe that if I think badly about my situation, I'm just going to get worse, and if I think well of it, I'll get better. Where's the stats on that?
They're not there. That's the interesting thing. When I was going through this, there was some tentative kind of research suggesting it was true, which kind of scared me because, you know, what was I going to do?
Well, yeah, but I've always thought of you as so positive.
I had the second disease of a bad attitude.
Really? Really?
Yeah, really bad attitude.
Yeah, you probably hated it.
I was horrified. First of all, that we have this, epidemic, and we don't know what causes it. As you said, it's more confined to the industrial countries, so we suspect there's something environmental or lifestyle going on, but nobody's identified it. And I don't think the research is too focused on the environmental causes. And the second thing that's so horrifying about it, once you're in it, is that the so-called treatments like chemotherapy are so barbaric. You know, they really are damaging, toxic, debilitating treatments.
Yeah. And you went through all that. You did that.
I did that. Yeah. Why? You know, now I'm not so sure why. But, I'm not so convinced by those statistics.
Yeah, right.
But it turns out now, thanks to some terrific research at the University of Pennsylvania that came out in 2007, that, there is no basis for that. People, the so-called positive people, there's no reason to think that they survive breast cancer or any other kind of cancer better than people who are grouchy.
Yeah, but maybe they're jolly as they dance to their graves, you know. That might itself be worthwhile. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's something wrong with pink washing. Anything.
Wait, pink washing, that's a great term.
Isn't that a great term? I borrowed it from somebody else. Taking something as dreadful as breast cancer and saying, hey, this is really a nice experience, and you get to get accessorized and all these pink things and buy these great new products. Like, I just saw a breast cancer wine for sale.
Why, come on.
No. It had a pink ribbon on the label, and it said, Hope Wine.
Well,
you have to drink a lot of it, I guess. To
a that. Lot of it would be good, but you're not supposed to drink when you're having chemotherapy. So.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, I don't know that either. I just said it. Anyway, Barbara Ehrenreich, this book, Bright Sided, takes on this whole positive thinking thing, which, I mean, you do a beautiful job of talking about the history of all this and talking about Mary Baker Eddy and the Christian Scientists and all that stuff. And it has occurred to me that all of this is a way of shifting responsibility for misfortune or bad illness from the culture and from the medical establishment to the individual.
Well, I share your exact paranoid suspicion, you know, because then it's a sort of blame the victim thing. Oh, you're not getting better? What's the matter with your attitude?
Well,
what's the matter with our treatments or anything like that? But
right.
Something wrong with you.
And I also think that it's very convenient for the healthcare providers and for the insurance industry and so on to have the victims of disease being relentlessly cheerful, because it isn't so hard on those who are trying to help.
Well, and there's another thing, which I would venture only as a suspicion,
mm-hmm.
And that is in the 70s and the 80s, there was a women's health movement. I was involved in it.
Well, yeah. In fact, I want to mention that you wrote one of the more interesting books together with Deidre English, For Her Own Good, 150 Years of the Expert's Advice on
to Women,
which is talks about mutilation and all kinds of horrible stuff.
Yeah. And there had been a women's health movement which had challenged prevailing approaches to breast cancer. So in the 70s, we were challenging the radical mastectomies that left a woman really kind of crippled on one side,
mm-hmm.
one arm,
mm-hmm.
and saying, you know, there's got to be a better way. And yes, they eventually, under pressure, found another way. And all through the 80s and so on, we were challenging different kind of bizarre treatments they were doing and bizarre things they were doing. And then this stuff about positive thinking and the pink ribbon culture came along, and you know, you kind of got the cancer patients to shut up.
I'm sure there's no, there's been no statistical work on that, no medical sociology or anything, but I kind of suspect that that's true. And I think that almost anything that creates docility or passivity in patients is going to be supported by a lot of the establishment.
Right. But, you know, I might not have even made that connection so clearly if I didn't then go on from the breast cancer experience,
mm-hmm.
to see something very similar being done to layoff victims, downsizing victims.
Right.
You know, the era of downsizing begins way before this recession.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And downsizing presented management with a problem. You know, how do you get people to go without any kind of fuss or, you know, becoming bomb throwers or whatever it is they feared? And how do you get the people who survived to work twice as hard as they did before? And the cure for all this was positive thinking in the form of motivational speakers, for example, brought into the workplace and tell everybody, well, just like with cancer being a gift, they'll say, being laid off is really a wonderful opportunity. Because now you will, you know, you can transition, as the expression goes, to something much better. And also that the only way to get through it is with a positive attitude, because no employer would want to hire anybody who is at all cranky or independent thinking or anything like that.
I want to step back for a moment and talk about this whole culture of positive thinking. The wonder world of magical thinking, this whole notion that somehow there's some kind of quantum physics going on in all of this. And I have to go, huh? What's the deal there?
Well, you see, if you question some of these things, you know, with the true believers, who are legion, I must say,
mm-hmm.
And they will say, but don't you understand, there is a law of attraction. like I said, as if there were a law of physics,
mm-hmm.
that means that things that you think and that you want, or even bad things that you fear, whatever you think will come to you. So if you think positive thoughts, wonderful things will come to you. In fact, the exact things you want will come to you.
Well, everyone knows God wants you to be successful.
To be who? Who?
God.
God?
God wants you to be a success.
Successful. Well, you know, you don't need God in this. I mean, that's the religious version.
Ah.
But there's also a secular version which just says your thoughts have some power. They're like vibrations that go out into the universe and bring back the good stuff you want. You want money, Joe?
Yeah, y'all, I like money.
Okay. Well, then you have to visualize money, the exact amount you want. You have to say affirmations to yourself about how that amount of money is going to come to you. You could even start spending it. It's so guaranteed.
Ah.
And, you know, and you say, huh, how could that work? Well, that's where the, quote, quantum physics comes in. And it doesn't mean, let's not even go there. It's just magical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in quantum physics that says that $100 will appear in your wallet if you visualize it. At least
no.
Not the quantum physics I studied at Reed.
Yes, well, you see, that's that Reed education spoiling your hope.
Mm-hmm.
I find, first of all, I think your book is extremely useful because it takes away or demythologizes all of these realities and brings us back to real causation, to economic issues and real health problems and so on. And I do think that America is on a kind of mystical jag right now.
Yeah, it's funny. The kind of magical thinking involved in positive thinking is very hard to distinguish from that of many so-called pre-literate societies, smaller scale societies that we have historically not regarded as very civilized.
Mm.
It's the same thing, though. If you want it, you can have it. If you think about it hard enough, it'll come to you. Your thoughts have these great powers.
Well, yeah, I remember in Peru, they have these dolls that you buy that you put the things you want on. And then you use that as a kind of a altar or to pray to or to have intercede for you with Jesus or someone. And I also know that in many Catholic communities, if you have a broken limb, you buy a little silver or, if you can afford it, a gold or representative object, and you put that up at the church, and then somehow that transforms itself into a healthy limb.
Hmm.
So you know there are these cool things you can do.
Yeah, no, I didn't know. That's wonderful.
But and of course, whenever something does go well, and they've used these objects, instead of looking at the stats, nobody does that, and say, "See, God heard your prayers, and your little broken foot thing worked."
Mm-hmm.
Magic.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that there's what you suggested earlier. I mean, there's a real. It's very useful to both the medical establishment and the insurance industry to have people taking on responsibility for illness. It's also useful for capital to have workers take on responsibility for their own layoffs when these are structural issues or environmental issues that have verifiable, real statistical truths to them, and that all gets brushed away because people tend to be, and I don't know what other word to use, superstitious.
Yeah, it's. I think you could say it's a great system of population pacification. I mean, what better than to say to the victim of something,
mm-hmm.
whether that's a layoff or a disease or poverty, say, you're responsible. It's, you know, it's your thoughts. And you know, and I sort of think that this has something to do with the fact that we've gone through so much economic hard times in this country with so little social unrest to go with it. Well, I think that's not entirely so. We got rid of Bush, I think, on the strength of dissatisfaction
But now, we seem to have a kind of centrist, Clinton-esque government in place of Bush.
Yeah, but at least it's not magical.
And the leadership is brighter.
They're very bright. I mean, Bush was the consummate positive thinker, and he said so. He was an optimist. He was the optimist in chief. He thought his job was an extension of the cheerleading he had done in college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to exude optimism. Condoleezza Rice told us a little after the fact, that she did have some doubts about Iraq, but she didn't dare raise them because Bush hated to be around, quote, pessimists.
Yeah.
You can't raise a doubt. You can't raise a question.
Again, magical thinking.
Yeah.
And I do think, though, that every time, and this is happening more and more frequently, given the economic circumstances, there's an incident of insane domestic violence or a random accident or murder or something, the site of the event is covered with flowers and teddy bears. And I am now beginning to believe that the teddy bear industry may actually be responsible for these events. So I have my own magical thinking going on here.
No, that's a very interesting thought. Hold that thought, Joe. I've been fascinated by the teddy bear phenomenon for a long time, ever since when I was, you know, had the breast cancer episode, and I found a classified ad in the local paper for a pink breast cancer teddy bear.
Cool.
That just, I can't tell you how much that scared me, deeply, existentially scared me. And then I went into the web, and at the time, there were all kinds of different lines or species of breast cancer teddy bears available.
Wait. You mean there are like panda teddy bears and grizzly teddy bears?
I really mean brand.
Oh. Okay. Sorry. I was getting off into some weird image.
There was a Columbine school shooting.
I remember that. There was a teddy bear for that?
Yeah.
What was it in? Did it wear camouflage and carry guns? What?
I don't know. I don't even know if it said school shooting on its chest.
Every time, and by the way, local news all over the United States now is about if it bleeds, it leads. Every time there's some domestic disaster or insane acting out behavior by a newly unemployed person or whatever, the teddy bears appear. And I do think that perhaps there is a god of teddy bears that is in charge of this and causes people to put teddy bears out to affirm the power of this god.
Huh. Now that is interesting magical thinking, Joe. I had thought it was the teddy bear manufacturers.
No. See, now you're just hung up in this materialist model. You need to think beyond that to realize that there are forces at work here that we barely can comprehend.
You mean teddy bears are running the whole thing?
I believe the teddy bears are having a picnic at our expense.
Well, we have made a breakthrough here.
It could be. I think there's a book in this. Unfortunately, you don't need a new book. Or actually, I randomly talking here. Are you writing a new book?
I'm thinking.
Well, watch that.
The publishing industry is in bad shape that nobody's saying, oh, where's your next book? Where's your next book?
But your books sell well.
We'll see.
We'll see. Well, you're very humble, very humble. But part of what I have always admired in your work is your willingness to get in there and do the dirty work. Nickel and dimed really impressed me. I mean, I couldn't do that. I'd be too lonely, too isolated.
Not if you're busy working all the time.
Right. And serving food and hanging out with the grease people.
Well, in Brightsided, I started with my own cancer experience.
Uh-huh.
Now, I didn't opt for that as a journalist. You know,
right. What do I want to do? I want to write about cancer.
I should
get cancer.
Right. But then I did put myself into some new environments. That's true. I, for example, visited America's largest megachurch.
Uh-huh.
Which is the Joel Osteen Church in Houston, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. You know, it's a former basketball stadium. He can take in 40,000 people, at a time for a service. wasn't quite full when I, on the Sunday I was there, but then it was August, maybe.
But then they have a free will offering, so let's say half of those people drop a buck or 10.
They make $1 million a Sunday.
How much?
$1 million.
Oh, why am I not a Christian? What is wrong with me? I'm missing the boat.
Well, you don't want to just be a Christian, because that could mean being a sucker and just tithing yourself all the time.
Ah.
You want to be a pastorpreneur.
A pastorpreneur. It sounds obscene. A pastorpreneur.
Yeah.
I think I've missed the boat entirely. I thought I was a fairly cynical person, but you're giving me waves of missed opportunity that I should have picked up on.
Not too late. Never too late.
I just find, in the midst of what I think of as a blooming economic and cultural crisis, all of this entertaining ourselves to death crap becomes more and more frightening to me. And there's so much of it. I now believe that the nation is divided into those people who are engaged in politics at all, divided into two sets of realities. And if you look at them in media terms, one set is a Fox crowd, the other set is the MSNBC crowd. And neither of them has a really fundamental, or if you will, radical analysis of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand, right, I mean, my understanding of what's happening right now is that we have the combination of two strange things coming together. Hard things for people to handle, some people anyway. One is the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Two is the first black president ever.
That's apparently scared
a
lot of people.
A lot of people, the Fox crowd,
yeah,
kind of puts those things together and says, yes, that's what's, somehow that's what's wrong with this country. We've got a black president.
Who's not really an American.
Who's not an American, right?
Right. No, the weirdness of all of this, the strange Glenn Beck lies, the bizarre analysis of things, the loss of any sense of being rooted in the real world, is to me, I don't think it's puzzling exactly, because I understand the escapism behind it, but it really is scary. It really, really is scary.
Well, I think what you said, in there is the core of what I believe. Is the thing about the real world.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to be bold as to say, it's easy, the real world. We always have to be discovering it. It takes a lot of concentration, a lot of observation, a lot of discussion to see what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's a job of science. I think that's a job of good journalism. You know, you try to get to the bottom of things so you know what really needs to be changed. But you're empirically rooted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's, let's say whether you're talking about the magical thinking of positive thinking, or you're talking about, the Fox fantasy world, where, for example, one of my favorite things last summer was the idea that Obama's health reform was really a new form of reparations for blacks.
Oh, I didn't hear that one. That's pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's important to understand this. You see, if you thought white people would get something from this, health reform, no. It was going to be a trick. This is from Fox.
So this is just a backdoor way of giving black people some bread.
Exactly.
I didn't realize that.
The white people will pay all the taxes.
Uh-huh.
And the black people will use all the health care.
And that is so racist, it's almost beyond belief.
Well, I'm just saying, if you no longer are tethered to reality, tethered to empirical observation,
right?
A lot of places you can go.
Well, what I find interesting in the healthcare thing is how easy it is, apparently, for Americans to operate. And I've seen this in other situations as well, against their own not only their own class interests but their own personal interests. I mean, here's all this evidence about healthcare. Sorry, go ahead.
Now, I interviewed a guy who was out there with the teabaggers protesting against health reform, and he was about to lose his health insurance.
Ah.
And I asked him, well, what about that, And he said, well, I guess I'm just a martyr.
A martyr? To the cause of what exactly? What is
fighting
their cause?
Socialism.
Ah, of course, fighting socialism. I think socialism has sort of lost in the U.S., and I keep waiting for some kind of social democratic movement to be reborn, you know? Now, you were part of the Democratic Socialist of America in the earlier days.
Yeah, I think I'm, you know, temperamentally very much a socialist, whether there's a party or an organization that represents that or not. But, you know, I want to keep, I don't want to abolish all markets. So what does that make me, a social democrat?
Yeah, it does. And I agree with you, by the way.
I don't want the government deciding what colors of lipstick there will be. All right?
Well, I don't care about lipstick.
All right. Well, then you can leave that to us. All right.
Yeah, I'll let this is going to get really sexist. I'll let women decide the color of lipstick, but by golly, I'll decide the color of cars. No, but seriously, I think, since we get into this a little bit, that markets have a real place, and free enterprise, truly free enterprise, is a good way of delivering some goods and some services. But I think there are things like railroads, airlines, electrical power, healthcare, and I could make a long list.
Please, water.
Yeah, water. Yeah, water is very important in this context, which should be managed and operated in the interest of the people by those people who are technologically aware and sensitive to the needs of those people. And that's
right. not for profit.
Yeah, not for profit. And that's not Coca-Cola, and it's right. Not American Airlines or whomever. You know,
I'm with you absolutely on that.
And I,
there's,
you know,
areas of spectacular market failure.
Really?
The market has failed in the healthcare area.
Well,
the market has failed to deliver us flu vaccine this fall.
Well, and then that is amazing. You know, there was a casual item, I think it was on CBS, pointing out how England, which is the big enemy because they're socialized medicine, how England has taken care of the swine flu epidemic so well that the projected numbers are not appearing there, and everybody who's at risk gets a phone call from their local practitioner urging them to come in and get a flu shot.
Oh my God!
I mean, how rational is that?
I can't. In Virginia, where I live, I can't get any. My grandkids can't get any. The doctors say you should get them, but
where do you get them? Right.
Yeah.
No, I think that the healthcare system, in terms of public health, is so incompetent, and I believe that it is really encouraged in its incompetence by the megalithic healthcare industry, the insurance and drug people.
Well, we relied on Big Pharma to produce vaccines for this fall,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't come through. And they, this is another case of runaway optimism, by the way, in positive thinking, because the government, as usual, was over optimistic about what the private sector could deliver. You know, just as I think the government leans on the private sector far too much, whether it's the contractors in war zones or it's expecting these evil health insurance companies to make sure we're covered. So the government relied on them, and then, you know, the companies started running into problems in the summer,
mm-hmm.
But they did not report this to the government. They just kept giving optimistic reports. So there we were all in our little positive thinking bubble,
mm-hmm.
and nothing happened.
Right, and then there are other kinds of issues. Do we actually trust pharma to have done adequate testing on the vaccines? And what happens to me, and I think a lot of people, is that we develop such a centralized distrust of all authority. You know, it goes from, well, pharma's full of it, the government's full of it, maybe there's conspiracies involved, maybe in fact we can't trust any of this. And the next logical step is to leave us in a sense of terrified isolation, which makes us ready victims for the Glenn Becks of this world.
Right. I mean, there's such a thing as a healthy distrust. You know, wanting to be sure things are checked and verified and tested well enough. And then there's such a thing as, oh, no vaccinations ever for my children, which frankly scares me.
Well, yeah. Once you reach a level of unvaccinated, well, you and I both know this. Once you reach a level of unvaccinated percentage of the population, you're set up for an epidemic of all sorts.
Right.
Anyway, I think that one of the reasons why I really wanted to talk with you on the air about your book, Brightsided, Barbara Ehrenreich, is that, you know, it was a book long overdue. This whole, I hate it. I just hate it when people are relentlessly cheerful and kind of accusatory of those of us who see the dark side.
Well, it's an interesting thing. As I have traveled around the country, you know, with a book tour,
mm-hmm.
I ask audiences, how many people here have ever been criticized at work for being, quote, negative? You know, a third of the hands go up.
Yeah.
And people will come up to me and say, I was just called out by my boss for my attitude. And all I had done was ask some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is, you know, corporate America kind of sewing itself into a bubble of ignorance and, you know, magic, rather than face what's out there.
Well, and we see all these, speaking of magical thinking, we see all these Ponzi schemes coming along, everything from Amway to Madoff. And it gets revealed to be what it is, and then it happens again and again and again. We are, I think, it may even be in our genes, I don't know, predisposed to ignore the complex realities that we face and very much have a psychological direction of blind optimism.
I don't think it's in our genes.
I hope not.
No. It's a very American thing, but remember, Americans are pretty genetically diverse.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
See, now you knocked down one of my fantasies. You're just ruining everything, Barbara. Why are you always...
I went along with your teddy bear theory.
Yeah, you went with the teddy bears. I could see that, and it was quite a stretch. I appreciated that. But I often mistake effect for cause. It's been one of my worst sins. Or it should be my worst sin. Maybe I should say that. Anyway, I thought that when you did a historical analysis of the relentless positive thinking thing, you were serving not only the interests of a rational thought, but probably the interests of scientific analysis. And I was really pleased to see this book. I have to tell you, I think Brightsided is an important book. I don't know how it's doing in the marketplace. As you say, all publishing is in trouble. But I really am glad you wrote this thing.
Well, thank you very much, Joe.
And Barbara, I don't know when you're going to come through here, but try to stop by KBOO or something.
I will. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, and I really enjoy talking with you. And every time we encounter each other, I don't know how you feel, but I have a good time.
I do, too. Yeah, no, we should definitely take this on the road.
All right. It could be a show of the future. We're talking with Barbara Ehrenreich. Her book, Brightsided, is out right now, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. Barbara, thank you very much on behalf of KBOO and me, and hopefully we'll have another conversation soon.
I hope so.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Don't go away. Oh, she went away. That's okay.
Hang up and try your call again. If you need assistance, dial your operator. Please hang up now. This is a recording. Please hang up and try your call again. If you need assistance, dial your operator. Please hang up now. This is a recording.
to make your life just to make your life better. Hey, well, it's nothing to me. I really am sorry.
Maybe I'll put out a thing.
So how long is it? Can you tell?
It appears to be 34.
Oh, well, that's not bad. Then I wasn't so bad. No.